Need a new set of optics? For more than a decade, Riton Optics has been providing optic solutions for hunters and shooters of all types and disciplines. Check out their Primal line for those products geared more towards us hunters. From binoculars and spotting scopes to your basic 3-9 scopes and longer range crossover models, the Primal line from Riton was made for hunters. Learn more at RitonOptics.com. That's Riton, R-I-T-O-N, Optics.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
This is the OKest Hunter Podcast. Never pass on shooter bucks, because that's just meat in the freezer. It's your tag, you hunt how you want. This is OKest Hunter.
And go. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, Lord. Eric, if you're hearing this, that means we've succeeded. I got a face for radio and a voice for a boys choir, so it's all good.
That's a good line.
Yeah, not bad. So, here we are, a few days away. It's pretty exciting stuff. Couple days, Saturday morning, it's opening day of Wisconsin's 2021 archery season.
This is what we've been waiting for.
It's what we've been waiting for. Christmas come early. You and I both have been doing a bunch of scouting.
Yep.
You especially, because this is new territory for you. I mean, you're a transplant here, essentially, aren't you?
I think this will be great. Yeah, I am a transplant. I think this will be good because you and I have both been doing something. We've been doing it two very different ways.
Yeah.
Which is interesting for this
because yeah.
My family and I moved down here last July, so it's been just over a year. And when we moved down after the painting and moving in and trying to unpack, I tried to get in the woods a couple of times, so I had somewhere to hunt.
Right.
And it ended up working out really lucky that I went into a spot blind and shot a decent buck early.
Sure.
But then this, after September 20th, when I shot that buck last year, it was like, all right, game on. Like, I'm going to learn as much as I can about this area.
Right.
So I've been on tons of different properties. Pretty much anything within an hour of where I live, I've tried to get feet on the ground, and I got cameras. Every camera's on a different piece of property, pretty much. And I've been just trying to learn as much as I can, as quick as I can.
Sure. How many cameras are you running?
I think I've got...
Down here.
I got down a couple here. In Illinois. I got three in Illinois.
Yep.
But I think I've got 10 here.
Okay.
9 or 10 here.
Okay.
And there's two cameras that I ran all summer on one property. Otherwise, they were all on separate properties.
Okay.
So I kind of just scouted, map scouted, and then got boots on the ground. And the spot that I thought this is where, I don't know, I tend to... My trail cam, we're talking about maybe talking about trail cam strategies, but what I did with all
this,
my cameras.
This could kind of coincide with it.
What I did with all my cameras, and I always tend to do this, is I'm really bad at summer cameras. You and I have talked about this.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm bad at it.
Okay.
Because I know where the transition, I feel like I want my camera to be where they shed velvet.
Yeah.
And they're going to be going into their fall home.
Sure.
Like subconsciously, that's always in my brain. So that's where I tend to hang my cameras. So my summer pictures, I get some.
Okay.
But my idea is always you hang it in summer. And then you're not, there's no scent because the buck isn't typically living there.
Sure.
But when he comes into that fall range, the camera's already there and it's doing the intel. And then when I go in to hunt and I'm checking my cameras, I haven't disturbed that area at all. He's fresh to it. And it's like, you know,
yeah,
it's new to him. So he doesn't mind it.
That makes a ton of sense. I never even thought about that, to be quite honest with you, because I'm running cameras trying to get eyes on a buck, but knowing that that movement through that area where that camera is, there's a very strong chance it's going to be seasonal.
Yeah.
It's only going to last maybe till the beginning of October, or like this year, we're in a drought down here. All that foliage and coverage is going to be gone. So yep. they might only be there for a few more weeks and then off to the thicker stuff.
And I think it's still useful. and important. A lot of guys say summer pictures don't matter, and I think to some degree they do. It's just what you use that information for. So,
well, yeah, how are you using
your area? I think it's very important to know that those deer are still around or still frequenting.
Yeah,
with your situation, which is a totally different unique situation that you're doing this year.
That's a totally different situation. We'll get into that later. But I like that idea, and I like your line of thinking. And this is why, you know, we try to talk about this stuff, is you get a different perspective on it. We all love to get pictures. I mean, I know you love to get pictures. You and I have been sharing pictures. I bet our inbox is ridiculously full of trail cam pictures between the two of us. And it's cool to get those pictures, but it's not killing the deer. You know, a picture is not killing the deer. You're aware of his situation. You're aware where he's at right now or at that time. But like you said, that is their summer range. And you got your cameras hung in a different area where they're probably going to go and rub around and shed their velvet. And it's a secure spot where you don't want to be in there every 2 weeks. Like I got a couple cameras that I can reliably check every 2 weeks because they're used to human scent in that area.
And some of them, you can do that. If your camera on a field edge feeding areas, they'll tolerate that a little bit.
Right.
And I did hang a couple.
Yeah.
On field edges this year, because, you know, talking with you and stuff, I was like, you know, I really should just look for some summer deer and see if I can get some. So your insight helped me with that for sure.
Sure.
But I think I was texting you this past weekend when I got out and checked some cameras. There was a big rainstorm coming in the next day. So I thought, perfect day to kind of dive in.
Wash scent out.
And I was a little bit, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't want to say bragging, but I was saying, hey, Greg, I've been finding fresh rubs within, 20, 30 yards of almost all the cameras I checked that day.
You bet.
Which is what my goal was. When they shift into that fall range and they start finding where they're going to hang out, I want my camera to be there waiting, because that opening week of bow season, which is typically a little bit earlier than what it is this year.
Yeah, this year it's 4 days off.
Which isn't a huge deal.
It's not going to make a big difference.
But I love to wait for that, do my last August card pull typically to see what's going on. And then I just leave those cameras for a couple weeks till season. And then I'll make my best guess, pull the card when I go in to hunt, and hopefully that's already there. So the camera at that point just becomes like a confidence builder, I guess.
Yeah.
Where I already kind of know where I want to be, or, because you're already thinking about where those bucks are going to be in their fall range or like the cover. And it's a little bit different down here too, because you have so many of those dead ash trees.
Oh, there's tons of them.
I mean, up north where I'm used to typically hunting, when the leaves come down, everything changes.
Right.
So this change down here feels like it happens a little bit sooner, maybe.
Sure.
Than it happens up there, because the leaves don't drop till beginning of October-ish.
Okay.
But here, some of your areas, I don't know, they feel like they're already,
With the drought, this year.
Yeah, I suppose this year with the drought.
You're going to see colors come up. I mean, maples are going to be turning. Some of my maples in my neighborhood, the oaks have already been shooting acorns. For 2 weeks now. And that's kind of early. Typically our hickories are dropping middle of August, and we already had oaks dropping acorns.
There's been acorns almost every time I walked the last month.
And last year, so we had a couple strikes against us last year. There were little to no oak trees dropping acorns. They just didn't make any. We also had a weird frost that messed things up.
Late spring or something.
Yeah, like it was just really weird. It was weird. It was a spring, we had spring starting, and then it cooled off and we got a frost just as things were starting to form. But our oak trees here too, I've noticed like every other year we get a crop of acorns. So if last year was the off year where we didn't, this year is the year that we should technically have acorns. I'm walking by some of the trees just because it's been so dry, and I didn't see any acorns up there. Mm-hmm. Now further up, because some of these oak trees are so big, there probably is some acorns on there.
Yeah.
But I haven't set foot back in some of those areas now, because like you said, middle to end of August, I don't want to be messing around in there anymore.
Yeah.
I'm done playing around. I've done all my summer scouting. I like doing the summer scouting. What I don't like is the bugs. This year wasn't bad for the bugs because we're in a drought.
The beginning of summer was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Scouting. It really wasn't bad at all.
But, I don't know. The bugs weren't terrible this year. They weren't terrible last year either. But I typically don't scout as much as I did this summer but I have a reason I scouted as much as I did.
Mm-hmm. You're a damn good reason.
Yeah, it's a real good reason. So we'll see if we catch up with it or not. But running the cameras, I was able to verify somebody was in the neighborhood. And by checking them every 2 to 3 weeks, I was able to go, yeah, he's on here pretty consistently in the spot. I know that there isn't much for acorns over in this area. I know where there's a few other trees dropping in another area, but I also know that there are guys hunting in that area
where the acorns typically drop.
I will find at least one brush blind, and I will find a 2x6 strapped up into a tree with a rope ladder going up in there. It's pretty janky looking.
Sounds interesting.
Oh yeah, that's quite interesting. So, and there's usually 3 or 4 cameras in there also.
I would imagine there's deer.
There's deer sign.
Be buck sign.
Typically
up in those oak flats or oak ridge traps, you're gonna have rubs, scrapes.
Yep, there's a couple
all that good stuff that those guys want to hunt.
Yep, there is. There's always, and it's a well manicured path that these guys go in every year, and they go and snip stuff down. They make their own path through it. The warden walks in there. I'm sure he probably wouldn't be very happy to see all that, but it makes it nice for the deer, and it makes it nice for those guys to be able to walk through there and get in. So that's the nice thing about summer scouting too, is right around now, I think those guys will have all that stuff in there. I know the cameras are there. Yep. I've seen them. If I take a walk through there tomorrow or Friday, I'm sure I'll see what I'm thinking I'm going to see. There'll be the evidence of not the brush blinds built here, that piece of 2x6 with the ratchet straps and the rope ladder will be back up in the tree again. Okay, that's good. That's good for me, because the deer are going to already know those clowns have been in there.
So are you thinking that those guys will be in there early season? Or you think they're just getting ready for hunting later in the season? Because before we put stuff on, we were kind of talking that seems like a lot of people, not a lot, but a lot of the kind of weekend warrior-ish are like, they're waiting until temperatures get colder and the
mosquitoes
die down. But do you think those guys will be in there hunting those acorns early, or hard to tell?
Hard to tell, but I hunted that spot, that ridge, even though I found that sign the 1 year, 3 years ago, I went back in there and actually they didn't have a stand up, but you could tell someone had been in there because the trail had been freshly clipped and, the branches were still green where they had caught. So, and I found one trail camera at that time. So they probably saw my picture on there and doubled their efforts and added another stand and maybe did some more work. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I went in there, I went past to where those guys were hunting, and I hunted like the ridge comes down, goes to a flat, and then it goes off into the swamp. And there were quite a few trails that came out of the swamp to that flat. I hunted till dark opening day, and it was windy. It was hot in the 80s. The mosquitoes were terrible, and I didn't see anything other than another hunter lighting up a cigarette right at dark. He never knew I was there because I came in from a different access point than where they parked at the top of the hill.
Gotcha.
So
was he up on top of the ridge or up the ridge?
He was probably like middle of the ridge. So not on top, not on the bottom, like middle of the way.
Above you?
Yeah, he was above me because I was down at the lowest flat before it dipped into the water.
Yep.
I was like two trees away from putting my toes in the water.
Which is where you have to be for an evening hunt.
Well, because that's what I thought too, but the wind was wrong to even be there. But I was probably more so hoping because I'd done some scouting and found some other beds south of there, and the trails had looked like they were going north-south. But then after going in there, because I hadn't touched it all summer, going in there, well, the trails are coming right to here. And on a typical wind, a westerly wind, that would have blown my scent right down that trail.
Gotcha.
So, but we had an easterly wind that night. So I was like, well, this makes sense. Went in there, hung my set up in there, saw nothing, just the hunter. And I think I scared him a bit because I actually came out. I started breaking my stuff down right at legal. Time's up.
Yep.
Pack it all in. Down with the stand, the sticks, camera arm, all that fun stuff. Packed it all up on the stand, like a frame pack, and started walking through. And All of a sudden, I see a flashlight probably about 50 yards down the ridge from me. Come on. And flashing around, and I had a big headlamp, so I just flashed it his way, turned it off because I knew it was bright, and just kept walking. And then I could smell a cigarette, so he was up there smoking a cigarette. And I just kept walking, you know, and got out of there. And I think I blew one deer out in one field on the way out. There's a big CRP field between me and where I had to park. So I learned something, you know, just going in there, never sitting in there before. I learned the amount of hunting pressure there was, and who's in there, you know, and their habits. So it wasn't a total loss. I just can check that spot off, you know, and go, yep, it's not worth putting the time in over here because these guys got it all stunk up.
Which, I mean, those kind of hunts happen. Yep. And they feel like a bust at the time, but really it's almost just as important as if you had gone undisturbed and not seen anything. I would say it's almost more important because then you know, okay, this is what's happening here.
Yeah.
And know to focus elsewhere.
Elsewhere.
And that's almost as good as knowing where to focus on as knowing not where to focus on. So you don't burn too much time in those spots. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was one sitting there and I was, nah, this just isn't the spot.
Yep.
So I picked up and moved off, and I put a little time in another spot, and that one didn't pan out either. So it was another one going, okay, this isn't it either. This is not the place to be. You know, whether it was the way the wind was carrying or something, it just was a new spot to me. So learning new spots, it pays to set them, even though if you kind of have a little bit of doubt, just throw one set at it. I think it's worth it just to kind of peace of mind.
And I like what you did there. And that's what I was saying. At least you were where you needed to be because you said you were near the bottom of the swamp. You're almost in the water. No matter which way the wind's going, when that wind settles at night, unless it's super windy, your thermals, you know, you're going to drop. So that guy who's halfway up the ridge, if he's educating all the deer and you can't shoot to him, why the hell are you sitting halfway up the ridge?
Yeah.
At the bottom, at least if they make it and your thermal's there, at least, you know, they make it to that edge, you might be in the game yet.
Yeah.
But if you're higher up on that ridge and your thermals are dropped, you know, depending on the situation.
Right.
But you got to put yourself in the game.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm always dropping milkweed. Shoot, my uncle years ago taught me about milkweed. You know, I don't use the powder thing. A lot of guys will use a powder thing. I never even knew what that was at the time, but he had a pocket full of milkweed that he always keep in his jacket, and he kind of showed me about that. And you know, and you start watching some of the other stuff, and everybody else is using milkweed too, so it was pretty neat. But milkweed, it was great that first sitting that flat, dropping milkweed, and you know, you feel the wind do one thing, and because there's water there, that thermal actually will pull, even if you have a certain wind. It was an easterly, a southeasterly, so it'd come in, hit the ridge, and kind of tumble. It was almost like a vacuum effect where it would tumble a little bit. See, I could drop that milkweed and watch it coast for about 20 yards, heading the way the wind was, and all of a sudden it would get behind something.
Flip right around
and come back and float up again because there was some sunlight in there hitting it. The heat, the thermals would cause it to rise, would come back up and kind of hang there, and then it would push off and fall again. It was doing all sorts of weird stuff.
You do learn a lot with that stuff.
And
how interesting it is and how the wind plays with this is completely unrelated, but
yeah.
I was shed hunting a cedar swamp with my buddy Lane and his girlfriend Lexi, and we're shed hunting this big cedar, and it's like a vast section. Big oak ridge up on one side, and then we're walking through the cedar swamp, and all of a sudden I see a light spot up ahead, maybe about 150 yards in from the swamp edge. It's an area where a bunch of trees blew down.
Yeah.
Created an opening.
Sure.
So naturally head to that opening. Well, of course, all kinds of rubs all around that opening. As soon as you get in there, you're feeling wind.
Really?
You're walking through a cedar swamp, right?
It's,
you know, it's consistent canopy all the way across.
Right.
You don't feel any wind.
No.
You get to that opening, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That wind is
things start
dumping
happening.
In there. And it's like, well, no shit. Why would a deer walk through the middle of a cedar swamp where the wind's doing next to nothing?
Yeah.
Here, everything's dumping in there. So those bucks were coming into the back edge of that opening. They had rub lines around both sides of it going up to the oak ridge. They were going in there. It's like, you know, you hunt in there. No, they're going to smell you. But it was like, you know, it was just a perfect example of seeing how they're using their wind. Why walk through a whole bunch of nothing that's consistent.
Yeah.
And here I can get everything. And I was just like, I took a video of it. There's two balloons in there. This is up in the middle of the national forest up there where there's no balloons. The balloon thing's it's funny to talk about.
Yeah.
Down here, now that I live down here in southeastern Wisconsin, there's balloons everywhere.
Oh yeah, there's balloons all over the place.
But when I was up north, you don't find many balloons. So when I really did find a balloon, I would kind of take note of it. And usually it was in an interesting spot like that.
Yeah.
And in that spot, there was two balloons within about 20 yards. And there's deer rubs everywhere around them.
Unreal.
So just interesting about the
way. Oh yeah, no.
Totally sidetracked.
No, that's what this is all about. Go down a few rabbit holes and maybe somebody will help somebody learn something.
Connects the dots.
It connects the dots, yeah. And you know, as being an okay hunter, it's good to have these little tips and tidbits and talk to everybody. And that's what this is about, being able to, you know, throw our experiences out there and maybe it's going to help someone.
Exactly.
We follow the crumb trail.
I mean, everybody's experience or journey is a little bit different. And I was just really, really lucky that my dad led me. I wouldn't even say a trail of crumbs. It was like a trail of loaves of bread.
My
dad spent so much time in the woods and like always dragged me in the woods that just from following him around, man, I felt like at a young age, I had already learned more than, and at the time I had no idea. So that's how everybody was.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I realized my dad is a real weird guy. It's like he is in the woods so much.
Sure.
And then like, and that just got instilled in me.
And yeah. And my dad was in the woods a ton too, as when I was a kid. So like I'd get drug out to the woods to help make firewood. I'd get, you know, let's go for a walk, let's go scout. And we did all that, but my dad's method of teaching and your dad's were totally different. My dad had no patience for me. You know, growing up, it was, I remember first season of gun hunting, because that was the first thing I did was gun hunt. We didn't have money to go buy me a bow, so all right, I have a shotgun. You're going to go gun hunting this year. So I remember we're out there probably 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, it was early. It was at least an hour before daylight. All right, go to your stand. It's over there. Okay. Do I get a flashlight? No, you'll scare the deer away. So just walk over there. You know where it's at. Well, yeah, I've been there twice. So I kind of know where it's at. And, you know, and you're 12 years old. Walking along with the old 870, and you hear something, who knows what it is, raccoon,
Sasquatch,
whatever.
Sasquatch.
Yeah, yeah, Sasquatch is here.
Who knows?
Oh, crap. Yeah. Yep, exactly. You don't know what it is, but, you know, at that age, if you've never gone out there in the dark and messed around, you don't know what it could be. No flashlight in hand, so I'm just a little kid walking along with a big 12-gauge.
Yep.
Trying to figure it out, and I remember, like, getting really close to the stand and I not being able to find it. And I remember it's just turning gray light. And I remember like trying to silhouette it. I'm getting down on my knees and trying to look through the trees to see that platform.
And as soon as you start looking like that, right?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you're like, am I looking the right way? And you start turning a little bit. And then all of a sudden you're all discombobulated.
Yeah,
that's how I used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause in the Northwoods, especially because there's so much canopy there. Well, here it's a plot of hardwoods between fields.
You got edges. You know?
Yeah. I got edges at least to work with. So I was inside the edge. I thought I went east, and instead I went way north. And I'm looking and looking, and I remember, like, it's getting lighter by the second, and I hear things running around. And I can just make it out. I can just make out the platform of this homemade tree stand, you know, made a conduit and plywood.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah, it's a real beaut. And strapped there with a piece of dog chain, you know. And I remember just picking it out, and here I was probably 40 yards away from the thing. So, oh, good, there it is. And go up there. And how do I get in this thing? He put steps in the tree so the old screw ends.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was set for a man that was 6'2".
You're 12.
And I'm 12 and maybe knee-high to a grasshopper at that point.
My size.
Yeah. I don't think I was even that tall, buddy. But I remember trying to, like, climb up this thing, you know, and I remember dad telling me you got to use the rope, tow your gun up, don't carry it uploaded, don't do any of that. So the gun wasn't even loaded at that point anyway, because we never allowed to walk out in the out there without the gun loaded. It was unloaded, breeches open. He taught us good safety stuff. But I remember getting up there, you know, huffing and puffing, sweating, and the wind picks up and all of a sudden it starts raining. Your typical opening morning in southeastern Wisconsin. And getting up there, and I can, you know, I can make things out pretty clearly on the ground, pull my gun up and sit there. And by then, you know, things had calmed down, the rain had picked up and the wind was starting to howl a little bit, and the rain went away. But see, we went down a rabbit hole. Story time. Story time.
It's nostalgia, right?
Yeah, it's nostalgia, man. I don't even know where we were going with that. But to, I guess to the point, my dad didn't have the patience your dad did. You know, your dad might have sat with you for your first deer hunt, or, you know, at least guided you to it, where my dad was, nope, do your thing. I'm going to be over here doing my thing.
Before we jump off the dad topic here, for any dads out there listening, here's one thing my dad did, and maybe this is different. Up in northern Wisconsin here where we hunted, walking around National Forest, but I love that he did this.
Yeah.
What we did is whenever we would walk, it was just, I was an only child, spoiled brat, right? So it was, dad would lead the way because he knew we were going. I was in the middle. Mom would take up. She would always come with us.
Yep.
She was the caboose.
Mm-hmm.
So she just wanted to make sure I was keeping up and whatnot. And what we would do ever since I was a little, I mean, 6, 7 years old, is we'd walk out to wherever we're going. And then we'd get there, we'd do what we needed to do. And then dad would say, all right, take us back to the truck. So nice. I learned at a very young age, you pay attention to where you're walking, what hills you're going over, what trees you're going by, because dad was going to ask, take us back to the truck. Which way do we go? So I'm glad he did that because, man, I started paying attention to everything and like woodsmanship.
Yes.
And, you know, that was way, way back before you were, you know, doing anything with mapping on phones or anything.
No, that was way before. So, the good old days.
Knowing how to, you know, knowing how to get around the woods. I hunted with guys who, you know, were scared to go off where the areas they knew. And it was, I never had that fear because my dad had taught me that.
Yeah.
And he had the patience for me.
Sure.
So I always was like, I'm just going, what's over that ridge? What's over? Like, I never once thought about where in the hell am I going to end up? Cause I just always felt the way to get back, which was hugely beneficial.
Yeah.
So dad's out there. If you got kids, you bring it in the woods, teach him that stuff early and have them pay attention because that really, really helps their confidence.
Yeah. And be patient with them, you know, take the time. If you're going out there on a mission, you know that you got to be back by 1:30. Maybe that's not the day to do that.
Yes. That's a good point. Yep.
So pick a day where you can have the whole day.
And if they want to catch frogs and pick dandelions and you let them do that, they're going to associate good things with being in the wilderness and being in the woods.
You got it.
What the hell were we talking about before we got down that rabbit hole? Opening day or something's
opening
coming
day,
up?
Something is that like happening?
That's it. That's right. Yeah, something about opening day. I don't know. We're
talking about the past. So
yeah,
much.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's part of the fun of it, though. That's part of the fun.
That brings us to where we are today, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's why we hunt. It's the tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the whole nostalgic thing.
You bet. And, you know, getting back to my uncle, too. Every time he would come over, it was long before I could even go out and deer hunt. Like, I call him my uncle, but he was my dad's best friend. He taught my dad how to deer hunt because my dad didn't grow up in a deer hunting family. So he was kind of a mentor. He was about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years older than my dad. He's 72 now. I just talked to him yesterday.
Oh, really?
Still deer hunting up in the Northwoods.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I always look forward to seeing him because we'd see him like once or twice a year. It was usually before deer season or after, because pretty much September through November, he is up at his place up north.
And just doing his thing.
And doing his thing.
Was that up in Burnett?
It's up in Burnett.
Awesome.
Yeah. So plenty of good stories to be told about that place. But I always enjoyed listening to those stories. I mean, the story of him out in Wyoming rolling his truck in a washout in the middle of nowhere. And all he had was a couple of jacks and his buddy, and they got it back up off of its side and on its wheels.
Holy cow.
An F-250 from the 60s. Just a beast of a truck.
A giant square body.
Oh, giant square body truck. And
they roll nicely.
Oh, yeah. They roll real good. They stop on their side. Yeah. They're flat. No, man. But just the cool stories that he had. And I guess that's really what drove me to want to deer hunt a ton. And just the adventure of it all. I mean, I haven't gone on any major adventures yet that I can say. But I've had some fun along the way. And then, like you said, everybody's life's different. I got involved with work, and work took me kind of out of deer hunting. Not totally, but not to the point where I could do it consistently, you know, where you've managed to keep real consistent. I mean, it shows.
My friends always joke that, like, you know, they fish, they do this, they got, they're like, you just really love deer hunting.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I love to dabble in fishing, but man, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's just what I like to do.
No, and I love to fish too. Don't get me wrong, but it's really.
Well, I'm glad because you and I talked about the work situation, how you wrote it for a while. I'm glad I'm dragging you back in. I don't know. I'll take some credit for that. I'm not taking all the credit, but he's back in it, and I feel like he's geared up and fired up, and
yeah,
we're gonna do our best to. I'm excited to follow you in your chase this season because you've got a hell of a nemesis.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about your opening day strategy or what you're going for.
Well, let's talk about yours first.
Okay.
So you've been bombing around to several properties.
Yep.
Do you have like out of, we'll say six properties, maybe, do you have like a top two or three?
I do not have a target buck for the first time in many years.
Wow.
Down here.
Okay.
Up north, running cameras with my dad.
Yeah. You guys got that scope.
My dad was so nice. Like I brought cameras up there in the spring. I was like, let's throw it. He's like, he said, dude, don't even put them up here. Like, I got so he bought a ton of cameras. My dad's running 22 trail cameras.
Jeepers.
Right now. None of them are sell. So these are all like, which I told him, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But he's like, keep all your cameras. I got enough. Like, you put them down by you.
Okay.
And I was like, that's awesome. Like, what a nice guy. But we got some areas up there. We got some very nice bucks. But the Northwoods always has big ones.
Yeah.
We can always find them on cameras. They're always older up there than anywhere I've hunted. Locally,
sure,
just because there's not as much pressure.
The timber patches are more vast.
Yeah, it's big woods, so I mean there's always good deer. People don't think they're up there. They're
up there.
Always good deer.
They're up there. Even like where I hunted, the opposite side of the state from where you're at.
Yep, that's
where the state record was shot.
They're there.
Yeah,
the big woods is always a good place.
Yep,
it's always good. It's just hard. Well,
it's hard.
Difficult hunting.
Yep,
until you get used to it, mm-hmm. and then it gets a
scotch easier, not much.
It's still very hard.
You and I both know people
it's
that
still very hard.
Have been hunting up there for years and still haven't shot a wall hanger.
I know people who hunted up there for 30 years and never shot a deer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, down here, I got a whole slew of bucks on camera. 2-3 nice racks. I don't have anything gigantic, but sure. I'm okay with that. Like,
yeah.
The deer are going to filter in, filter out. And
if a 138 pointer comes,
I'm going to be very happy.
You're going to be very happy.
We've got Illinois.
Yes, we
potentially,
do.
Hopefully everything goes well and we can get down there.
Yeah.
So I have no problem punching a tag early on a nice buck. Like,
yep.
I'm happy to shoot a nice buck.
So. And then we can focus on.
Yes.
Where we think there's some real monster potential.
Yes. But I've got some decent deer on camera. A couple of big eights. One nice, narrow, heavy 10. Any of those bucks, I don't have one picked out, which I feel like is kind of nice.
Like, no, because
I like to bounce. You and I have talked about this. I love to bounce around and try new spots all the time. So not having one deer on my mind is like, in a way, I feel like really good about it.
Sure.
So the other fun part is I've got a buddy coming down.
Yeah.
My buddy Adam, who you and I scouted in Illinois with. And Adam is a phenomenal hunter who's only been hunting for a couple of years, but is like picked up.
He's picked up stuff.
Insanely quick.
And he's just a good dude.
He's a hard worker, man.
Yeah.
This guy is, some of the spots he's hunted that I know of, I'm like, I would not have hunted there because he's getting up at like, he's leaving at like 2 a.m. to hike it. So I just, he got a really nice buck last year with his bow and he's coming down for opening weekend. And I'm like, oh, man, I got a slew of decent bucks on camera.
Yeah.
Like, let's get after it.
Yeah.
So I'm just excited to hunt with him and try to get, you know, try to get us on some bucks. But I'm always very confident when I go and hunt that I'm going to kill one.
That's good.
And I can honestly say opening morning, I feel like I'm going to kill a nice 8-point.
I hope you do.
I got a cool buck on camera with bloody antlers that I sent you.
Okay. Yep.
And I went in to check that camera before the rain. And man, there was two really big rubs on the edge of this thick patch. That's a little bit of high ground in a low area and it borders a river.
Okay.
So there's a river that flows in. There's a little bit of high ground, and by a little bit, I mean it's probably like 150 yards.
Okay.
But it's narrow.
Okay. So it's a narrow island.
It's thicker than hell. It's like primrose, that rose bush, primrose.
That's multiflora rose.
Multiflora rose. Sorry. Yep,
that stuff is
multiflora
terrible.
Rose on the edges, and then it's all thick stuff. And there's tons of deer trails, tons and tons.
Sure.
And I found beds, and then on the tips, buck beds.
Yep.
And then I found one huge buck bed with a great rub line in the spring. It was on the interior between the thick and the river.
Okay. Nice.
It was just off the end. It was a hump.
Okay.
Surrounded by water. which none of the other beds were that. They're all in the main ground.
Sure.
And this one was a nice big hump surrounded by water with rubs in the bed. And then there's a huge rub line leading out to this, what I would call a transition area, where we crossed a creek. I ran my trail camera on the creek, had all kinds of nice bucks on there this summer. And on the other side of the creek is where it looked like they transitioned. So okay. There was rubs and rubs and rubs and rubs. And then they would work their way out through this lowland, off towards some crop fields, acorns. There's white oaks that are have a couple of acorns on them. So for opening day, if the wind stays the same, it's projected right now to be blowing out of the northeast-ish.
Okay.
In the morning, very light.
Okay.
But I'm going to be coming in from the west in a kayak very early.
Yeah.
Kayaking basically into the wind the entire way. And I got to take about 20 steps off the river and I will be over his bed on the downwind side.
That's perfect.
With acorns in front. So I don't know exactly which direction I think he's going to come from, but there's acorns and they're all over 100 yards away. Wow. So I feel like even if I'm going to try to get there early, but yeah. I feel like he's going to be feeding. Like they're coming from a distance from these fields. There's a bunch of fields on the other side of the road.
Sure.
I think he's going to stop at those white oaks because there's acorns on the ground. I found caps there when I was there.
Okay.
So I think he's going to be feeding there and I don't think he's going to get in super early. But I feel like if I can get up in a tree nice and high, the wind blowing out back toward the river, thermals pulling into that river, I think I'm going to shoot one opening morning.
That sounds pretty dynamite.
And I mean, historically, sounds tons of rubs.
Fairly foolproof, in fact.
The two big rubs I found, if the wind stays the same, I'm feeling very good.
Yeah.
Feeling very good.
I'm seeing the same thing. I pulled up the Spartan Forge app and took a look at the wind direction, and it's projecting an easterly variation.
Something of that sort.
Something of that. Yeah, I've seen it change 3 times now in the past 2 days, but it's still saying some sort of an easterly breeze. So that kind of plays out pretty decent for my spot because I'm hunting out in the swamp. It's a very dry swamp.
Now you're hunting evening, correct?
I'm definitely not going in there in the morning.
And I think that's wise in your location because Greg's got a boatload of deer, it seems like.
There are. You've said. There's sentries. Satellite bedding all over.
That buck is using his deer herd wisely.
Yeah, he is. He's using them as pawns, rooks, and bishops, man. It's definitely a chess game in that little area. So he's got the board set in his favor. Because I know when I've gone in there to check cameras, I've booted deer out. I mean, every time I've messaged you or sent you videos, I can hear deer bouncing off in the distance.
But they're always back in there.
Oh, they're always in there.
They feel safe there. That's their spot.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you got going for you.
That's what I got going for me. So my axis is going to be totally different than if I were going to go in there and check trail cameras. I'm not going to follow that little trail that I got marched through there to check trail cameras because I'd never deviated off of that. I didn't go very far.
Which is probably a good call.
It is.
You must have planned that out a little bit.
Well, and I've scouted that spot probably 4 years in a row now. Mm-hmm. I've scouted the crap out of it. In fact, I think I posted a picture about it some time ago, right when you and I first got to know each other a little bit. You're like, oh, that looks like some of the stuff I hunt. Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Northwoods in that area. It just is.
Yep.
And it could be why I'm drawn to it. And the fact that there's some nice deer in there too.
That's why.
Mm-hmm. But if I were to run that trail and like I was checking trail cameras, that would totally booger the whole spot.
Those sentry deer that are
better. Those sentry. Yep. Those satellite sentry deer. They're either going to run through and take them with, or who knows what they'll do. But my plan is to come in a different route, circle in, and get up to where I know where that bed is because I bumped him. I bumped him last year in September, at the end of September, when I was speed scouting. I just went in, carried my bow with. I didn't bring my tree stand. I just went out there with an arrow knocked. I got to figure something out with this. So I didn't find what I wanted, you know, in other spots. So I went plunging in, arrow knocked, crossed one part of the swamp, came up on a little piece of high ground. And of course, I go to step on a log. Well, it was a blowdown, probably about 30 feet long. And once you know, as soon as I stepped on it, that dumb thing came right down. Crash.
A little bit of noise, maybe.
Just a little bit of noise. Okay. It came crashing down to the ground. And I just about fell on my face because I bared all my weight down.
What does Fred Bear say? you can step over it.
If you can step over it.
Never step on it.
Yeah, never step something on like it. That. Yeah, something like that. Should have taken that note into effect, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm just okay at this, so. Well, okay. Yeah, we're both okay, but well, you're more than okay. But I stepped on it. It crashed. And no sooner did it crash and I just about fell, I stood up and I looked right at the end of where that thing landed. And out in the swamp, probably about 20 yards, I watched the big fella get up. I noticed the one side and the color and the shape. And I'm like, I know who that is. And as the crow flies from where I'm standing and where he is, it's probably about a 40-yard poke. And there was no way I was going to come full draw after, you know,
yeah,
darn near falling on my face. But he stood up, looked my direction, didn't blow, didn't stomp, just casually wheeled around and trotted off, working his way through all the thick.
And I bet you that deer didn't go far.
I don't think he did.
No,
I honestly don't. Because it's the stem count is so high in there.
That deer probably worked off out of sight, stood there for a good 20 minutes, and probably looped whatever way was downwind.
Yep.
You know,
that and he was down. He was actually downwind to me.
He probably bedded back down.
Like if I were being serious and if I knew that deer was there, that would never have been my route of travel. Because he had me dead to rights. Not only did he confirmed two things. He saw me by me making all my noise, and he smelt me because the wind picked up, hit me in the back of the head and carried right at him. And that's when he was like, nah, I'm out. See ya. So he was already downwind, but all he had to do was go back 10, 20 yards and he was safe.
And this is, you and I have talked about this, and I asked when we had Jake Bush.
Yeah.
Jake Bush called in and I was talking mm-hmm. to him. I asked him the question. I said, do you ever find where bucks are almost overconfident about their bedding area? Because I was thinking of you in this situation.
Yeah.
And that buck saw you, smelled you, heard you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a great bedding location. Right?
Yeah.
He's thinking, right?
Perfect.
He probably looped back, didn't go far, and he's back in there. And he'll be in there again. I mean, I really do think you're going to get cracks on him because he knows that it's kept him safe for so long.
Right.
It's just going to be waiting to get lucky.
Right. Well, so in fact, to prove that theory correct, here's the kicker. Was it 2 or 3 weeks ago? I was stumbling around in there. Came
in the
same spot. I came in from the other way after checking trail cameras. Oh, sure. I got on some hot sign. I got a weird way of looking at grass and going, yep, something walked through there. I'm starting to hone some woodsmanship skills to know when grass is turned a certain way.
Yep.
You know, something was through here. Get about 10 yards into it and there's a trail that goes this way. Now, it doesn't look like that's too kicked over. Look that way. That's definitely been kicked over. Take 10 steps, fresh, wet pile of deer crap right there. Okay. Take another 2 steps, a clumpy, wet, fresh pile of deer crap. Okay. So someone probably got up out of a bed, took a crap. That was the clumpy one. And then when they were on their way back from their little walk, they dropped a nice loose one here for us. So hunt the turd.
Right, hunt the turd,
hunt the grass. Why not?
I like where you're going with this.
Yeah,
this is not a new thing.
Yeah, no, it's not a new thing. It's just paying attention to the details, no matter how minute they are.
It's the key, right?
And question yourself every time. And the only way you're going to stop questioning yourself is to prove it. So, take another 10 yards into the thick, following this trail, and it's not very big. It's not very hardly. It's hardly worn.
Let's come back to that.
Okay. Like,
you remind me of that.
Okay.
Let's come back to that, but continue your story.
Yeah. So it's hardly worn. I get down it and I found remnants of an old bed. Like, I don't know, maybe you're familiar with looking at some of these beds in like these tag alder swamps. They'll grow some canary grass in them, maybe where the sun hits. You can see like maybe when the cover was thinner earlier in the year, like they had eaten that grass down.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe that grass had died, but you can tell, like, you look and it's a hump. It's so big. It's definitely big enough for a buck to bet on. But it hasn't been used recently.
Yep.
And you maybe look off and, you know, you're down on a knee because stuff is thick in there. You see a little sign of an old rub. Okay.
That's when you, that transition.
Yeah. And the transition, literally, I could throw a rock and hit the edge.
Oh, sorry. I'm just speaking to the velvet transition.
Oh, the velvet transition.
I do a lot of summer stuff.
Yep.
So I'm sorry. Opposite. Nope. That's what I'm thinking is
okay.
Fall bed versus summer bed.
Sure.
Sorry.
Sure.
Wrong transition.
No.
But that's good to know where your transition line is.
Yeah. It wasn't far away. So, and things change yearly too with the conditions.
Yep.
Things will thicken up.
Definitely.
Things will go away. But this area seems to be hot the past 3 years. Take another few steps and I stop after I found that bed and I find another one. And this one makes perfect sense because there's a good sized tree where he would have the wind coming. He'd be on the leeward side of that tree with a westerly. And he can look and see like it's a piece of tagalder swamp that opens up into another more grassier, less trees type of stuff.
I always like looking on anything.
They like anything that they can see through. Yeah. And he definitely could see through. But that bed definitely hadn't been used in a while. Take another, I want to say maybe 20 steps and stop. And I was going to pull out and like mark something on my maps.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, I, out of the corner of my eye, I see something move and I hear a bunch of stuff break. I see a flash of red. Big body, but the stuff is so thick in there, you can't really hard to tell who it was. Crashing out of the bed, went, from what I could hear, you went north and west.
This is when you were stopping.
This is when it's just stopped. Like, he didn't like the fact that I stopped. If I would have kept going, he probably would have just hung out there.
That's what makes me think it's probably your big guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, and
those big ones are going to wait till the last possible second.
Yeah, and then you make them uncomfortable, and then they go.
If they're either first or last.
Yep.
Out of there.
Yep. So, stop and look. See it move. I see the brush kind of shake. I see the red, you know, because he's still got his summer coat. I'm pretty confident I know where he went. I know the exit trail out of that bed. It's like a highway coming in, but like the back trails are very minuscule. It's thicker than hell in there. I take about 4 of my long gaping steps, look, and I can look in the bed. And it's perfect. It's all this willow and brushy stuff. It's old dead trees. There's a bunch of stuff. There's all this good stuff. So it's a cave. It's a cave.
Perfect hideout.
Yeah. It's a cave for the bear wook. So the bear wook is in there and it's huge. I walked around and there's more multi-floor rows around that too.
Anywhere you find multi-floor rows, look for beds. I swear to God.
Oh, that stuff is painful as hell to walk through.
It's good stuff.
You can't have thick enough pants to walk through it.
That's why they bed in there.
Oh, it is.
Nobody ever bugs them in there.
Nobody wants
to
go in there.
They know that. Sorry for...
No. So I circled around the bed because I wanted to see what that exit trail looked like. Because, again, stem count is really high. Walk around it and look in there. And I did shoot and sent you a video. Like, 2 of me could lay down in that bed.
It was massive.
It was a massive bed.
I'd say it was at least 14 Bushlight cans long.
At least.
At least 14.
Was it the Pabst 99 can pack, maybe?
Maybe it's the 16 ounces.
Or the 99 12 ounces.
Somewhere in between.
It was big.
It was
big.
It was a good size.
It was a big bed. So I kind of looked around in there. I could smell it, you know, like he stands up and pisses in there. You could smell, and there's hair all over it. And it's all the grass is just laid flat. I mean, there's even thistle growing next to it. He didn't care. He pulled the thistle over, and that was laid on. But he had, like, there's essentially 3 positions in that bed where he could move himself with the winds shifting any variation of westerly. It was perfect. So
I bet you that one got marked on the map.
It might have.
I bet you that one may have gotten marked.
and I did a bump and dump. I'm gonna steal a term of bump and dump here, but I went probably about 5-6 yards away from that bed. There's a dead tree. I hung a camera in it. I hung one of my cameras. We'll see if it gets anything, and probably gets more grass movement than anything because there's so much grass and thick crap in there, but it's pointing to where he would come in or exit if he got booted out of there. We'll see.
That'd be a very good intel camera.
It's very good. I'm not going in there until everything's the green is gone. I'm not going in there to take that camera out. It's going to stay there.
Well, you'll be able to take it out when you go.
I'm not going to say a word. I'm not going to say a word.
Hey, we're going to get him. We're going to work on this together. I've never been there, so it's a little tricky, but I think you're going to get him.
I probably should have had you out there. I've had Eric out there. Eric knows the area, but I'd probably get him lost in there. But that's kind of where I'm at with it. And I've gotten that deer on the camera coming out of that area. I've got a couple of cameras, like that one, he hits like clockwork. It was like every couple of days. He could have walked behind it. He could have walked further away from it because it's so thick.
Is that the one in the thick?
That's one of
the trees in front of it.
That's the one.
I think if you're getting him relatively consistently, it's showing that he is
right there
in there.
Because
like you just said, every other day he could alternate just 10 yards.
Just 10 yards.
One based way, on the
east
wind.
Or west.
Yep. So if you're getting him every couple of days, I mean, that's telling you all the info you need to know.
And that's kind of what I thought. And then the proof was in the pudding of me booting his ass out of there. So hopefully I didn't spook him too hard, but it was a couple weeks ago. I think he's got time now. And he knows when other guys are entering that piece of property to the north, like, their scent will blow right down that piece of flat high ground and blow right into that bed. He'll know. He'll know exactly what's going on there. He'll know if the does are up there feeding on the oaks. Everything works in his favor there. So
now, as far as luring him out of there in your favor,
there won't be any luring. It'll be, he's going to come when he damn well feels. I'm pretty sure of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this bed's only going to be good for a few weeks. Because once the hunting pressure starts getting in there,
he's going to push back.
And he's going to push further in.
And now, I don't. You have a piece of information that's very useful from one of the most heavily pressured times of year. Mm-hmm. Last year during gun season, what did you learn?
I learned where he likes to bed during gun season.
If you know where a deer will bed during the week of gun season, I feel like that's a very important, I mean, not many people know that.
No.
That's an intricate detail that not a lot of people know.
And that bed is another foolproof. It's around. I sent you pictures of that
bed. Yeah, I've seen where, and you sent me it on the map. What do you do? Right. I mean, there's not a lot.
No.
And that's why he's there.
You can't hang a tree stand in there. You're not getting in there without falling over deadfall.
There's
cattail. There's red brush, there's willow, there's anything that can whip you, poke you, smack you in the face, it's there. You want to get wet? Take one wrong step. You're going down to your nuts in water.
But here's the deal. That's an opportunity to get creative.
Oh, it is.
I always tell my students, problems require creative solutions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it comes down to it and it's late in season there,
yeah,
we may have to come up with something that we borrow from someone else.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, if we know where he escapes the ultimate pressure, we may have to apply some pressure.
Yeah.
And have someone waiting in the ultimate escape spot.
Yeah, you bet.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If it comes down to it, if you know where he feels safest, may just have to apply pressure to where you don't want him.
This could lead to
send him where you want him.
A really nice late end of season, fill your gun tag if you haven't filled it type of deal.
Sit there.
Sit there.
Go walking. You tell me all whatever. The spots to hit.
I don't care. It's perfect. The way
you
this
won't
lays
have
out.
A gun tag.
I'm hoping not.
No, that's a trip. Hey,
you never know.
But in all seriousness, this deer that Greg is hunting, you know a lot of information, which is helpful, but in the same point, it's almost makes it more difficult because the area that he's there for a reason.
It gives you reason to second guess your stand location. That I'm almost thinking I want to hang where I have that camera. Or that where I'm getting the pictures.
Yeah.
I'm almost thinking I want to hang there. There's two trees that'll work there.
Now, how far is that from suspected where he is? Can you get in? Can you get in quiet?
It's about 60 to 80 yards.
Would you be hanging in tamarack?
It's tamarack.
So you'd be a little careful. You got a little flaky bark.
Yeah.
A little bit of noise.
Yeah, there's always noise with those.
Yep.
And anything else that's out there is dead. And it's not safe to climb in. And there's no cover. And honestly, I think I'm probably going to only be about 8 feet off the ground.
Max.
Because of the overstory and the understory. You've got that fine line where if you're 6 feet up, it's almost perfect, but not quite. If you're 8 feet up, yeah, I can get a shot down in there. If I'm 12 to 15, 18, 20 feet up, I might hear them crashing around over here, but I'm not going to see them.
And that is one advantage I've noticed is when you get into those areas where there aren't a lot of trees, the deer aren't looking up.
No.
When they're in hardwoods, down here especially, a lot of deer know to look up.
Yeah.
But when you're out in a grassy area, a marshy area, and there's barely, you know, shit trees around,
yeah,
I feel like that's their safe spot.
Yeah.
They don't tend to look up. So even being up 8 feet might be out of their safe zone. You know what sure. I mean? Like, they're not used to what's out in the marsh to get them that's right. up above. Nobody's hunting out there, really.
I took a doe out of a marsh property not far from there. And I, you know, running late. Long story short, was running late. I had my stand, my sticks, all my crap with. And I'm looking around going, there's no good tree. There was one ugly, nasty willow tree. I think every windstorm that year had hit it. There were branches laying all over the place. There was one that was about this high off the ground, and it was this deep in water. So it's like, man, it's getting down to crunch time. I got to get up somewhere. So standing sticks off my back, camera arm, camera, fanny pack, all the crap. Hell with it. It's going to go on this branch because it's up out of the water. Because if I set it on the grass, it'll settle and sink, and everything will be soaking wet.
Yep.
And it's a long walk back to the truck. Hell with it. I'm going to throw it on the branch. I get up in this ugly-ass craggly willow tree. And the tree, the trunk, I bet, is probably this big around.
Holy cow.
It's big.
Those willows.
But, yeah, they grow ugly. They wind hits them, some branches snap. Well, we'll grow back two more heads.
And the branches know? Will fall, and then branches, tree will turn yeah, up. The tree is growing above.
Exactly.
That's where I did my velvet filming, was yeah. off of a branch growing off of a tree.
Yeah, yep, exactly. So I get about, we'll say, 4 feet off the ground, if I'm lucky, and put my back to it, and kind of just move some branches around so I had some cover. And I had one branch that was perfect. It was like low hanging and stopped to like right about here. Well, I'm watching, and I can see over onto some private off in the distance, and I see deer running around on the private, on the crop fields as the farmer's picking. And then I hear some crashing around. And I look, and here's a doe. Comes right out, and I know this section real good. There's a trail that's like I-94 that comes through there, heading right for the crop fields. And the wind was out of the northeast. So it was like, if it swirled east, those deer were picking me. If it stayed the course, it was fine.
Just off.
Huh? It's just off. Well, doe comes out, stops, and looks right towards me. And I look at it and go, if I was standing right up there, I could pick me off no problem. Well, I'm just going to stand still. Stood still. And I hear more splashing around behind her. Here comes another good-sized doe. Okay. I got two sets of eyes watching me.
Perfect.
This is great. Well, that doe put her head down and started feeding and walked back. It was behind like the curtain of thick stuff.
Nice.
This doe comes walking out in the canary grass in the water. Still kind of looking my direction. And then the wind stopped. And it swirled just a little bit. I'm going, oh no, here we go. We're gonna have blowing going on here soon. Must not have bothered her. I walked over there. So she was smelling where I'd walked.
Yeah.
And this area is frequented by bird hunters. So, you know, they're kind of used to people being in
the It's not totally area. Out of
yeah.
the ordinary.
Yeah, it's not totally out of the ordinary. So she's smelling where I'd walked and kind of starting to follow towards the tree, 10 yards away. She looks and she sees my stand on top of the branch, sees it and gets curious. I'm like, you're not. Oh, yeah, you are.
Walked right
up to it. And you know, they're so close. She's so close. I can hear her breathing and
sucking it all.
Oh, yeah, sucking it all in. I'm like, yep, get a good whiff. I'm just waiting for this to start happening here. I'm waiting for you to start blowing. Yep, it's going to be a party here real quick. And her friend is, I can hear her friend middling around and not doing anything. No big deal. Well, she gets nervous after smelling and looking at that tree stand for about 2 minutes, wheels around and bounds once and stops and turns and looks and turns around and starts walking back again. I'm like, okay, this is a game now. So I clip the release on real carefully. And mind you, it's from me to the ottoman away by now. And I put the release on, and she just kind of looks my direction, but doesn't do the...
She's standing in grass?
She's standing in grass, but the grass, you know, it's kind of laid down because it's all wet underneath.
Yep.
And the wind had hit it a few times already, so this was probably late September, because the Brewers were in the playoffs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So...
All right.
So, and my wife's sending me text messages of the score of the game, and they're winning. Oh, you know, okay. So it's all good. And
you're thinking I might be losing right now.
Yeah, I might be losing right now. I'm gonna be losing right now. Clip the release on, and she comes back to take another hit. I don't know if I like that smell. And goes, nah, I probably shouldn't stick around here too long. And just, you know, takes a couple steps and stops, and I pick my bow up. And she just kind of looks my direction, but like looks right past me or right through me. I don't know. Nothing happening here. Carefully draw. And then she kind of did this. And I pulled in and, you know, lined up the peep, looked for the crease, squeezed the release, and watched the arrow disappear. It hit a little high because she was so close and I had set for 20 yards, you know. So I hit high, went ripping right through. Arrow disappeared in all the grass. She bounded, took about 3 steps, stopped, coughed, took another, I don't know. She might have went 30 yards with that shot and piled up before she had to cross a ditch.
Holy cow. That's awesome.
So died right there. Okay, this is cool. Get down. And, you know, and you're kind of jacked up because that was a close encounter.
Heck yeah.
It was just about on the ground.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. So, and it was a doe and it was great. It tasted delicious.
Heck yeah. That's awesome.
But I go to start looking because, you know, I gave her a few minutes and I heard her cough and I heard her thrashing around and that was it. Got down, looked for the blood, tried to find the arrow. Yeah. You know, canary grass this tall, it's a foot of water underneath.
Not
that
a great situation. No,
that arrow's gone, so there's an artifact in there somewhere. But come up to where she had crossed through and there's blood all over the place, all over the canary grass and up some of the branches of some of this willow that she went past, and took another 10 steps and looked, and there she was piled up right before she crossed the ditch. Didn't go 20. Loins. Probably should edit that out.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So it's kind of fun because, like, I can still hear deer back in this willow thicket.
Back where they were.
Yeah, where they'd come from. I tore out, and coyotes are howling everywhere.
Perfect.
So, yeah, perfect. So I take my sweatshirt, put it on top of her, take my hat and my coat and my tree stand, put it on top of her. Well, I might as well run back to the truck, call my buddy. My buddy's like, you get one, you call me. So called him. He met me at my truck, got the deer cart, got back to the deer, gotten it out, and I hear something walking, shine the headlamp, and there's 2 more does walking right to us. Like, they didn't care. here we are, got your friend, and you're...
It was dark out?
Oh, it was dark out.
It's unbelievable how that 10 minutes of difference between when they come in at shooting light and are super skittish and all of a sudden it's dark and you got your headlamp on.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how that confidence
in
deer goes through the roof.
Yeah. When they can't see me. I'm just going to sit here and watch. And I don't know how long that deer sat there and watched. It's like, yeah, I got something to do here. But yeah, I mean, that was a good time.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? I mean, I think we've covered what we want to do, what we aspire to do for opening day.
I think we touched on opening day a little bit.
Yeah. So
I will mention that, I mean, maybe this can be spliced up however you want, but Saturday evening,
yeah,
I've got a spot picked out for Adam and I. The area I shot my buck last year is a big bedding area. Well, I shouldn't say big. It's relatively small. Grassy, a little bit of marsh, a little bit of high ground.
Yeah.
Found a couple beds in there. And we're going to walk in through a creek. And then his tree that I was going to hunt, and I threw a couple. The first time I put my sticks on a tree, I got new sticks, was in this tree to test it out. And he can go right from the water up a tree.
Okay.
He's only going to go up about 10 feet, and there's some shrubs in front.
Uh-huh.
And it's looking over two creek crossings, one on each side of him.
Nice.
And he's got shooting out in front of him coming out of there. It's supposed to be higher than hell.
Oh, it's so going to be.
Deer should be automatically coming that direction.
You would think.
That's where the egg is. And then he's going to be right over. So I told him, I said, you're going to shoot a deer in the water.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Yeah. That'll be so awesome to do.
Blood in the water.
Blood in the water, baby.
So that's what
attract the sharks.
I'll just go somewhere close by.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Well, you're doing something to get him on deer, and that'll be awesome for him to experience.
Heck yeah.
It'll be sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up. We've covered that and then some. Jumped on a bunch of rabbit holes. It was supposed to be about a half hour long. I'm pretty sure it's much longer than that, but that's okay.
Maybe
that's
about 32, 33.
There you go. 33. 33 and a half. Whatever it takes. Cool. Well, here we go. We're going to end it.
Okay, it's Hunter.